On Wednesday, September 26, 2018, the League of Women Voters, Bozeman Business and Professional Women, and the Bozeman Public Library co-sponsored a forum on the ballot initiatives that we will find on the November ballot. Guest speakers were invited to present viewpoints supporting and opposing each of the initiatives, and then the crowd was invited to ask questions. This is the first half of the forum, which discussed LR 129, which was introduced by the legislature and which would ban all but certain individuals from collecting a voter's absentee ballot for delivery to the county elections office, and LR 128, which was also introduced by the legislature to continue a 6-mil property tax to fund the Montana State University system for 10 years.
I'm so glad to see all of you interested electorate. Thank you so much for being here. My name is Sally Mason of the League of Women Voters, and this forum is put together with our Bozeman Public Library and Bozeman Business and Professional Women. And you'll see them arrayed around the room. We are talking tonight about the four ballot issues, and here's how it's going to go. We're going to do one issue at a time. Start with LR 128, then LR 129, I 185, and I 186. Each person, the pro, will speak first and get 3 minutes, then the con gets 3 minutes. Those will be timed. The timers are in the front row, and they'll tell you when we have 1 minute left, and they'll tell you when you have 30 seconds left, and they'll tell you when we're going to get the vote. Okay? So that's how that's going to go. So 3 minutes apiece, and then we'll have about 12 minutes of questions and answers from you guys. And I request loudly and strongly that you not make a speech, but you ask a question, and you keep your questions short so we can hear from the speakers. And then they'll have 1 minute to wrap up, and then we'll move on to the next ballot issue. So welcome, everybody. I hope you came with questions, and I hope you're ready to listen. So without any further ado, we are going to start with LR 129, because our speaker for LR 128 is soon to arrive. It's a little late. So we're going to start with LR 129. The prohibition on the ballot collection. And the first is Al Olszewski, who's going to speak first.
How are you doing? My name is Albert Olszewski. I'm a senator from District 6. That is the rural areas from Kalispell down to Colson. And then up on the entire west shore of Flathead Lake, and then the east shore of Flathead Lake up to Woods Bay. So it's a large area, and when people say that, Dr. Olszewski, you're SOL, I know they mean that I'm Senator of the Lake, all right? So here's the deal. Legislative Referendum 129. For me, it's a constituent issue. I sponsored it on behalf of a constituent. I'm sure everyone here knows that every year during election time, there are dozens of calls, not hundreds of calls, not thousands of calls, but dozens of calls across the state where people call their police department, the county election department, they call 911. And who's calling? People who live alone. They're usually elderly women, but they're also the developmentally disabled. All right? And they are concerned about someone coming to their door and asking for the ballot. So let me tell you about Mabel. Mabel's a true story, but Mabel's not her name. Mabel is a very spunky, stubborn woman. She's in her late 70s. She's frail. You know, she uses a walker or electric scooter when she's in the community, but at home she walks around using her furniture. And you know what? She will not let her kids put her in assisted living. She's very proud of her house. She loves to live alone. One day, right before election, there was a knock on her door and she opened the door. Two people stepped into her door jam and said, "I'm from the state and we are here to pick up your ballot for you." And she said, "But I haven't filled out my ballot yet." And they said, "It's okay, we'll wait. Go ahead, fill out your ballot. We'll wait." She was a little intimidated by this. She went and got her ballot. She filled it out. She's flustered, she said. She handed it to him. And as they took it, they said, "Thank you, we'll deliver this. Oh, by the way, how did you vote?" How did you vote? Needless to say, at that point, she felt very distracted and distraught. And she called the police. And they said, there is no law, we can't help you, because there's no law that says strangers can't come up and pick up your ballots. So I'm sorry, if you have any issues, contact your election department. For that reason, we created LR-129. It prevents a stranger from picking up your ballot, all right? But it allows your family member to do it, your friend to do it, allows your health care giver to do it, and you know what, even an acquaintance. So they could have been a stranger, but if you met them, talked to them, and you decided that they're somebody you trust and you want to give to them, you can. That's LR-129.
Thank you.
Time, 3 minutes.
Hi, everyone. My name is Maren. I'm the current field manager at Florida Montana Foundation here in Bozeman. In 2016, I had the really fortunate experience of doing ballot collection with Florida Montana's Get Out the Vote efforts. We did ballot collection both in campus and in the broader community. Collecting ballots was no simple task. We were not simply knocking on a door and collecting ballots. We collected signatures, we verified the person dropping it off, we had to keep them in a locked box all day, we were in contact with our election administration officials all day, and during the time we were collecting them. We were able to help individuals who were differently able, students who didn't have capacity or time to drop off their ballots, and just members of the community in general who weren't sure when and where to drop off their ballots. LR-129 does not make sense for Montana. Representative Bryce Bennett from HD91 said it best when the bill came up on House floor in 2017. He said, and I quote, "This bill is about creating barriers where none are needed or none need to exist because our system works as it is. This bill hurts voters." LR-129 puts undue burden on individuals who are simply trying to cast their ballot. That is not Montana's value. Voters should be spending their energy on researching candidates and ballot measures that align with their values rather than figuring out how they're going to get their ballot casted. To be frank, voter fraud also isn't a problem, and it doesn't even actually occur. This law is such a problem that just simply does not exist in Montana. There are already safeguards in place to ensure our elections are secure, like the signature matching process. People don't steal or misuse other people's ballots as shown by the data. In 2017, Stanford University found there's only a 0.02% instances of double voting. The Brennan Center of New York University report reviewed elections that had been meticulously studied for voter fraud, and they found incident rates between 0.0003% and 0.0025%. Given this very tiny incident rate for voter impersonation fraud, it is more likely, the report noted, that Americans will be struck by lightning than they are to impersonate another voter. Legislators should be looking for solutions that improve our elections. They should be focusing on initiatives that allow for more access, like online or automatic voter registration. Voters should be spending their limited time and energy on researching candidates that reflect their values, not figuring out how to get their ballot to the elections office.
Okay, you each get a minute to answer questions. How's that sound? And the question could get posed to either person, either the pro or the con, but both people get to answer if they wish to, okay? So who has a question? Right there.
So the ballots that you were collecting, those absentee ballots that have already been sent out?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's absentee ballot collection.
And so those people with their absentee ballots could have just given it to a neighbor or anybody
that is correct. You know, an absentee ballot, when you have an absentee ballot, those that are delivered in, organizations like Ford Montana, or anybody who has $15 can get a list of who hasn't turned them in yet. And anybody can walk to your door and say, please, can I have your ballot? Anybody can. Again, this is not about voter suppression. This is a public safety issue where I have constituents who are concerned about the fact that they have someone coming to their door, they feel threatened or intimidated that someone's there demanding their ballot and won't leave until they give it to them. It's as simple as that.
Do you want to speak to that?
I first want to say that when you're creating barriers to voting, and some people don't see this as a barrier, and I understand that, but when you're telling people that they need to jump through certain hoops to cast their ballot, that is voter suppression.
Yep.
Especially for young people, especially for differently abled communities. I also want to talk about Indigenous populations that don't even have access to the postal service. In some communities in rural Montana, that looks like voter suppression to me personally and to Forward Montana Foundation.
Lauren?
Could we have solved Mabel's problem by simply requiring ballot picker-uppers to have some form of identification that legally shows who they are?
Did everybody hear?
Yes.
Okay.
That's one option. That's true. That could be one option, to have someone put a placard on or some kind of card issued, like a voter ID, a photo voter ID if you want, something like that. You know, but the fact is, the whole idea here is that if you get your ballot, absentee ballot comes to you in the mail. You can't get a ballot unless it comes to you in the mail. So you have to have mail. And guess what? When you're done filling it out, you put it in the mail. So a post office, so if you can get it, you can give it back. And even if you can't afford the stamp, this is what the county clerk and recorders don't want to tell you, but you can put it in without a stamp. And it's state law that it'll go to the election department and the county clerk and recorder will pay for the postage.
I think when we rely on the idea that people might know that regulation, we're ignoring the fact that this is really hard information to find, number one. Number two, I know that young people don't know that that's a stipulation on the ballots. And number three, I can only speak from my own professional experience, but I don't know of any groups that do ballot collection that don't identify themselves on the doors. So I can just speak to that.
Yes, sir.
Do we know how many people, in addition to Maryville, has complained about the current system?
How many people have complained?
Again, it's not hundreds or thousands. Every election, it's dozens. There, and if you go to, on the voter guide that will show this, both the pro and the con on this issue have put in supporting documents. We have two newspaper articles and a police report as just an example of people who have identified themselves and what actually happened. I think Fort Montana does a nice job, but they're not the only ones that do this. Anybody can get an absentee ballot list and go to your door and ask you for your ballot.
Well, I think that that's a fair point. We just know that people don't do that, and the data doesn't show that. We just don't have many confirmed cases of voter fraud or voter people double voting here in Montana. And I don't think LR 129 is worth passing this when we've collected hundreds of ballots, and maybe there's been one or two phone calls like Mabel's. I don't think it makes sense for Montanans.
In the very back.
You mentioned Indigenous populations. Can you describe that? What is it?
Can't hear.
What is it? What?
We cannot hear.
Yes. Indigenous populations. What about those?
Define
and explain what the problem is.
I'm talking about Indigenous people, Native people from Montana that might live in reservation communities where access to the Postal Service sometimes doesn't even exist, or it can be really, really difficult. Indigenous populations, they sometimes don't operate within the normal postal service, so they have addresses that don't reflect the addresses that people living like in Bozeman do, so it can be really hard to sometimes find their location or their PO box and even get their ballot delivered to them in the first place. So LR 129 kind of puts in this extra barrier, because there are groups like Western Native Voice, Montana Women Vote, that do go and help Indigenous communities get their ballots collected, so this would just be another barrier to that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. And once again, the only way you can get an absentee ballot is if it's delivered to you in the mail. So if you get an absentee ballot, and this only deals with absentee ballots. So in order to get an absentee ballot, you have to have the availability of a postal service. So if you can get it, you can give it back the same way. So if an Indigenous population or anybody in the rural or frontier area does not have postal service, which I would love to know where that is, then guess what? Then they're going to have to go into an election department to vote early if they want to, or show up on election day at a polling place.
Yes.
I'm having a hard time understanding how you're going to make this law
implement this law?
How are you
going to implement this law? If there are 15 different ways you can say, well, you can collect the ballot if you're a neighbor or a friend or a relative or whatever, how are you going to discern that somebody who's turning in a group of ballots is not a neighbor or a friend or a relative or whatever?
Did you hear the question? Okay, how does it get implemented?
Once again, this is a referendum. Once the people speak, whether for or against it, then that goes to the Secretary of State, who will then develop rules and procedures, which puts it into place. In there, if you notice, there's a simple request in the ballot measure that says that a person, if you're a family member or caregiver, an acquaintance, that you're limited to dropping off 6 ballots at a time, and that you would have to fill out on a list your name that you're dropping them off. Now the fact is if this passes, it'll be up to the Secretary of State and their department to create the rules and regulations to deal with this.
Lauren?
Yeah, I just want to echo to touch on that point. I think LR 129, the language is too vague to begin with, so implementation sounds really difficult to me. And it just is another way that creates a barrier to young people, all of the stuff that I've already mentioned, our differently abled communities. It just even more makes elections and the process around casting your ballot so much more confusing by adding this extra stuff in place. I just don't think it makes sense. Yes, sir.
We've kind of been talking a lot about how do you ensure that communities that don't necessarily have the best access.
Hang on a second. Somebody's phone.
Howard, like,
in mine. Yeah.
We've been talking a lot about how Indigenous communities and rural communities don't necessarily have the best access to the post office or to a friend or have enough money to necessarily have a car and drive into town to go cast their ballot at early or on time. How necessarily do you foresee protections being implemented into the law given that the language is so vague?
Did everybody get the question?
No.
Well, here's the deal. The question was asked is, if everything's so vague, how are you going to provide protections for those people that don't have access or good access to the Postal Service? LR 129 does not deal with those issues. It deals with absentee ballots where someone has Postal Service. All right? This is limited only to this area. The bill is not vague. It's 2 paragraphs. It says that you're prohibited from picking up someone's absentee ballot unless the exceptions are your family member, your caregiver, all right, your friend, or you're an acquaintance. That is not vague. That is very straightforward, and it's common sense.
Mara?
To touch on how short the bill is and how it doesn't include any of these protections like you mentioned, I worry about the very clear message that we're sending to certain communities when we don't put in those protections. And I worry that we're telling Indigenous communities, young people that don't know where to buy stamps, differently abled populations, young people, single mothers, parents that work all day. I worry that we're telling them that their vote doesn't matter to us.
Yes, ma'am.
Could you speak to the fact that dozens of people are calling in worried that they won't get their vote, or that they're worried when people come to their house, but the organization needs to collect hundreds more votes to represent Montanans?
Will you repeat the question I missed?
Well, yeah, thank you. Go ahead. Ask her to repeat it again.
Would you repeat it again a little louder? Stand up, if you would, please.
Can you just speak to the fact that dozens of people have this concern per year about people coming to their door, but on the flip side of things, hundreds more votes are collected through these organizations, it sounds like.
Do you want to go first on that?
No.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. So that's the ends justify the means. Of course they can collect those ballots, and they're bringing in hundreds of ballots. But again, and that's a good thing. It's a noble thing. But the fact remains is an absentee ballot comes to you by the mail, and you can go back by the mail. That's how it's designed. There are people who are out there, and they want to help you to get your vote out. It's unnecessary, but it's a good service. And if you want to give it to somebody, please do. But I will tell you, what does the Secretary of State say, both Democratic and Republican? If you don't know the person, don't give them your ballot.
Okay. Can I respond?
Yes.
Yeah. So I am worried that when we say that we've collected hundreds of ballots, but that's an unnecessary service.
Right.
That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That's my only comment.
Well, once again, the absentee ballot's designed that if you get it by the mail, you can give it back to by the mail. That, for you to have to collect it, is unnecessary, but it's noble, and I think it's an added-on bonus service. It's not that it's a waste, but it's not a necessary part of the system.
Can I respond to that?
Wait. Yes, you can respond.
So the absentee ballot service is a great service, but our elections are designed for people who understand the language. So like all the different marginalized communities that I've talked about already tonight, our election process is often really difficult for them to understand. So again, I want to push back. I don't think that it's an unnecessary service. I think it is crucial to our democracy in Montana.
One more.
I just have one question. If the people that don't get absentee ballots are indigenous, whatever that word is.
Indigenous. Yes.
How do they get their absentee ballot if they don't have a post office box, they don't have a mailbox?
Okay. How do indigenous people get their mail if they don't have a mailbox or a postal service?
Anybody who does not have postal service cannot get an absentee ballot. So if you live in a rural area, a frontier area, or even if you live on campus, if you don't have access to postal service, you cannot get an absentee ballot. This referendum, whether it passes or doesn't, does not address that issue.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's completely true. I'm not saying that indigenous individuals get their ballots and then they don't know how to get them back in. I'm saying that sometimes in more frontier, rural, or indigenous communities, that access to the postal service can be limited. I can't speak to that experience because I don't live there, but that it can be more limited, or you know, it might not be available all the time or all the right hours, which is a barrier to getting your ballot in the mail.
Okay, now each of you gets 1 minute, and then we're moving on to the next ballot issue. Who wants to be first?
I went first, but I'll let you go first.
Oh, great. Do you want me to go up there in the middle?
Sure.
Okay.
1 minute.
1 minute. Robust, healthy democracies are built by removing barriers to participation in our elections. Bills like LR-129 are a distraction from bills that allow and create more pathways and access to the ballot. LR-129 sends a clear message that for marginalized groups and populations in Montana, that their votes don't matter to us. What our legislator needs to focus on is removing barriers to election. If a voter needs a friend or a trusted organization to collect their ballot in order to cast a vote, we need to protect that. If removing barriers to voting means advocating for government-sponsored postage for people to send in their absentee ballots, moving polling locations, or making stamps more accessible to young students, that's what that looks like. Montana does not need any more barriers to voting than we already have. Moving forward, the legislature needs to spend their time talking about automatic voter registration, online voter registration, and more accessible polling locations. But all of them came out with a step backward for Mount Cannon.
Once again, this issue is a constituent issue. It's not about voter suppression. It's not about trying to raise the bar. It's not about trying to deny rights to somebody who doesn't have postal service. All right, this is about absentee ballot. It's about elderly Americans, Montanans, who live alone, who want to be independent. And you know, they feel threatened when someone comes to their door, stands in their door jam, and won't leave until they get their ballot. All right, and when they call the cops say, we can't help you because there's nothing illegal about what they did. For you and I, for most of us, we just say go away, and that's all right. But if you're developmentally disabled, if you're 80 years old and are on a walker, and you're frail, and you're threatened for what that perception, then you should be able to be called to law enforcement and get some help. But right now, they get nothing.
Thank you, both of you. Great audience, thank you. We're going to move on to LR 128, the levy for the universities. And pro is Bob Brown.
You get 3 minutes, Bob.
Okay. Well, thank you. It's a long drive down here from the White Dish, but it's worth the drive.
I did it about 2 hours.
I made the trip from White Dish to Bozeman.
Bob, right here, 1 inch. One inch, Bob. Right here, close to you, right?
Like an ice cream cone.
All right, start it, Bob.
Okay, well, I'm not even, I'm just going to tell you that I went to college for 4 years, from 1966 to 1970, and they were some of the best years of my life. In fact, I was student body president here at Montana State University, and I was also a member of the Fighting Bobcat debate team that beat the Grizzlies for the Big Sky Championship. And I've been involved to some extent with the Sixville Levy ever since that time. Anybody here ever hear of Sonny Holland? Yeah. Well, Sonny headed it up, I think, in 1968. And I headed it up in 1998 statewide. And we got a pretty good margin, but we have to work for it, and that's the way it should be. The Sixville Levy forces the university system in Montana to explain to the people why it ought to be renewed every 10 years. So we're unique in that regard in all the states in the nation. Here in Montana, we have a say in what we pay when it comes to the financing of higher education. Most states leave it entirely up to the legislative appropriation. In fact, I think all of them. So Montana is unique in having to go before the people for 10% of their budget for university funding every 10 years. And that's what we're about this year in 1968. The Sixville Levy was first proposed in 1947 after World War II. It was approved by the people in 1948, and it's been reapproved every 10 years since 1948. So it's a proud Montana tradition that goes back a long way. In fact, we have the last six governors of Montana, three Democrats and three Republicans, have endorsed the Sixville Levy. And currently, Senator Steve Daines is an endorsee and a strong proponent of the Sixville Levy, as is Senator John Tester. So when you think about how polarized and political politics is today, you know, politics has never been so political as it is today. And this is one of the few unique kinds of things that we still have that goes totally across the party boundaries. We've had Democrats and Republicans traditionally for the last 70 years support the Sixville Levy for higher education in Montana. And it's a wonderful, good, proud tradition. It's a tradition where our grandparents, perhaps in some cases our great-grandparents, enacted the Sixville Levy back in the 1948 general election. They did so for their kids, our grandparents, who did so for us, and now it's up to us to pass on the same level of support. Not any more than six bills, not any less than six bills. The same level of support that goes back to 1948. It's a great, good Montana tradition. Does a lot for research as well as for education, and we need to renew it.
Perfect.
We begin with a joke. A father takes his son aside the night before his wedding and says, "You need to learn to say three things. I'm sorry, I love you, and we can't afford that." 48% of Montanans support this tax in the first poll that was taken about a year ago. I've been asked to say a few words in opposition. I've not been asked to speak in opposition to higher education. Like Bob, I graduated here.
Could you identify yourself?
My name is Tom Burnett. I'm a resident of Bozeman.
Good job.
Can one oppose this act and still be in support of higher education? You can try to buy a new car for $28,500 as opposed to $29,000 and still be in support of having a new car. Montana's 2019 fiscal year budget for the university system reporting in the Times the other day is $1.56 billion. There are probably some enterprise funds in there. $20 million is 1.3% of that. ending the mill levy would not debilitate the system, especially in light of this year's 1.5 to 3.3% expected decline in enrollment. $20 million spread evenly across all Montana families is about $50 per household per year, making this about a $500 ask. The legislature already directs $315 million a year in House Bill 2 appropriations to higher education. That number has gone up faster than inflation and population growth for the last 20 years. Spread evenly across all Montana households, that's about $800 of existing support. Per student taxpayer support increased 43% over a recent five-year period. Why is that? Because enrollment is doing this everywhere but at Bozeman, and appropriations keep edging up. Maybe taxpayers are doing that.
Okay. Thank you. And Bob Keith will mic for you. I can shout loud. Questions? Yes.
What is a guarantee that this the money from this levy goes to tuition stabilization as opposed to building or new projects?
Did you already hear the question?
It goes to what's called unrestricted funds, so it doesn't go to any particular purpose. It wouldn't go to build a building, it wouldn't go to like a stadium or anything like that. It goes to pay professor salaries, it goes to put learning material in classrooms and that sort of thing. It's just the unrestricted, regular University of Montana budget.
That's one of the arguments of the proponents, is that if this did not pass, tuition would have to go up 18%. Well, that's uncreative. Managers have got lots of levers to pull without increasing tuition. In a budget that big, there are a lot of places to manage.
In the pink, right there.
I don't know whether it was on the television or the public radio, but I heard a comment of those who are opposed to the six mill levy that the number of out-of-state students who are going to Montana State colleges, and in particular Montana State, that they didn't think it was fair for the taxpayers of Montana to be subsidizing out-of-state students.
Do you want them to comment on that?
Has anybody else heard that comment?
Yeah, I've heard the comment, and I find it kind of curious. I don't know exactly what the percentage of out-of-state students here at MSU is, but I do know that the in-state students pay tuition fees that is just a little over $7,000 a year, about $7,070 a year. And that's, I believe, the lowest or the second to the lowest in the whole Wichita region. So we've been able to keep the cost down for our kids pretty well compared to other units in the university system. But the out-of-state students pay $24,000 a year. So we really don't subsidize them, they subsidize us.
Well, this is the point I wanted to hear, because I was really offended by the comment. To me, we're subsidizing, you know, all students. And I also felt that for us, in particularly in Bozeman, to lose the out-of-state population would be a big blow to our country.
It's a good thing. A university should have a mix of people from other states. And the fact that kids from other states want to go to college in Montana is a good thing. And we've got to be charged hard for it.
I agree with both of you. I don't think that's a good argument against the levy.
That's all I want to hear.
Okay.
Back
there. Yeah.
So the thought about the amount that taxpayers are paying per student increasing while enrollment is decreasing, that would only account for tuition, but just research make up for that in any way? Like, is there more research?
Did you hear the question?
No.
Will you say the question again? No. Go ahead, Tom.
I cited the fact that per student support, taxpayer support, has increased 43% over a five-year period. That doesn't have any reflection on tuition. It's just the taxpayer money coming into the system.
I'm not sure I understood the question quite as Tom understood it, but I think if I understood it right, I'd answer it in two ways. Number one, a ton of money comes into Montana to pay for research. We get various kinds of grants from private companies and from federal government. So it's a source of income when you look at it that way. What fraction of the budget comes from the 6% or 6 mil of it? Well, it's about 10%. And so I think Montana State University, and somebody here may have a better handle on this than me, but I think that Montana State gets something like a $70 million appropriation each year. So 10% of that would be $7 million. And so we'd have to get that from someplace else if the levy doesn't end.
So I cited the figure $1.56 billion. Bob is referring to, I think, current unrestricted funds, which is in the $250 to $300 million area. And so it depends on what your new rater is. The bottom one. Thank you. It's good to go on. And we're back.
Yeah, we're in track. How is the 6 mil tax divided up between, like, within the university system?
Well, I don't know what the budgets for each unit are, for sure. I know that the University of Montana gets something like $60 million over the course of the biennium. So we're talking about 10% of that. Which would
10% of whatever is appropriate.
Yeah. And here it runs in my mind, it's about $70 million. So I think it would be roughly $7 million we have to come up with here at Montana State from some other way if we lost the $60 million.
I was thinking about sitting on a previous question.
Okay. There was a...
Yes.
Well, I wondered if the two of... One of you said 10%, one said 1.3%. So I want to understand what budgets you're saying the mill levy is a part of.
I'll just add another figure. I'm always at odds with the university system over this question, because in the audits it says that operating expenses are such and such, and you divide by the number of FTE students and you come up with a number. At Montana State it's I think 25 or 27,000, and that's not even very far different from Flathead Community College. So in the mid to upper 20s, those are the operating expenses. And we said, well, that's not current restricted fund, unrestricted fund. And it's just, I haven't figured out their argument. I'm sure it's in good faith, but I look at the line items in those operating expenses, and they look like real expenses. They look like salaries and wages, heat and light, not transfers and accounting gimmicks. It looks like real money. And a student is paying about $7,000. Of the operating expenses of $27. Just want to throw that in the statement.
This question for either. Can you list the colleges and universities in Montana who receive these funds?
Okay, sure. Three community colleges, Dawson, Lyle City, and Flathead Valley Community College. Two flagships, Bozeman and Missoula. A two-year college in Bozeman called Gallon College. A two-year college in Missoula called Missoula College. MSU Billings, and a two-year college in Billings called City College. Helena's School, Haver, Dillon, those are both 4 years. And
Butte,
and Highlands College, which is a two-year, down in the plains of Butte. There you go, there's 14. Plus seven tribal colleges, but our contribution to them is under $1 million.
Very good.
Thank you.
can't even keep all four ballot measures straight.
Yes, sir.
Can you explain what they use the money for? I know you said it's unrestricted funds. What does that mean? Is it professor salaries or parking lot or stadium seats? Where does the money actually go to specifically?
Well, it goes for professor salaries, it goes for stuff in the classroom, and maybe a little bit of debt or something like that. It could go for a coaching salary. But if you can't go for a specific purpose, such as to build a new stadium or a classroom, or something like that. It's just for general unrestricted operating costs.
Operating costs.
So that's not sports.
Yeah, that's scholarships.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it wouldn't be a kind of thing like intramurals, you know, that you've got to mow the lawn for that sort of thing. The coach has a salary. So I suppose indirectly you can tie it into sports. It's a part of the educational program.
It's like in the public schools, it's salary heavy. It's mostly salary. Mm-hmm. And operating.
Any more questions? Okay, then 1 minute apiece, or to have two. We have a little time. 2 minutes apiece.
You hear who goes first?
Nope. You guys pick.
I think there's a little advantage to going second in the final rebuttal, but Tom is an honest man. So he won't bring up any new arguments in the rebuttal. We can count on him for that. I'd just like to say, if he wants to respond to this, he can, though. We've done a lot of wonderful research, and I wasn't able to go into much detail about that, except to just mention that there's research that takes place in the university system in Montana. And one thing that's just critically important in the history of Montana is the agricultural research that takes place here at Montana State, as well as in the ag research stations around the state. And when I headed up the 1611 campaign back in 1998, I remember talking to a professor here. In fact, anybody know Anton Berkeman? He's a crackerjack ag professor here now, and I became acquainted with him actually before giving this presentation this evening. But I got previous information beforehand back in 1998 that after, in 1948, about the time the 1611 went into effect, the average yield of wheat in Montana on dry land was 20 bushels to the acre. 20 bushels to the acre average of unirrigated wheat. You know what it is now? Well, it's more than double that. It's 48 bushels to the acre. And that didn't have anything to do with global warming or global cooling or anything. That had to do virtually 100% with the experimentation and the research that takes place here at this unit and the experimental stations around the state. So look at all the money that's put in farmers' pockets. And look at all the money that's spent to help small communities around Montana. What an enormous boom to Montana. And that's the kind of thing we don't always think about when we think about the university system. The same thing with brain research. I know you wonder where did they get brains over at the University of Montana. They've done some wonderful work in brain research at the University of Montana, believe me. And it shows real promise. And that's the kind of thing that can affect every family. So it's enormously important what our university system does. And we really need to reenact the 1611.
No one is arguing that higher education is not valuable in general. The question is, at what level does it need to be funded by taxpayers? We have a really good thing going here. Enrollment is the metric for measuring quality and excitement. In Bozeman, both units are doing very well, attracting people, and we produce some really good degrees. And it's great for us, who I suppose most of us live. But if you go to Missoula College in Missoula, the legislature bought them a $30 million building there 3 or 4 years ago because of overcrowding, and that place is a ghost town. And the two drafting students in City College in Billings pointed across the quad to the, not a quad, lawn, to the health sciences building, new $9 million, not that many years prior. They said, that place is like empty. And my six or seven visits there have proved that out. So everywhere but Bozeman, things are getting really somnolent and kind of quiet and dark. And the question is, should taxpayers continue, their burdens continue to stay steady or grow while the enrollment is dropping? Maybe we can't afford that, according to the father's advice to his son.
That's the end of the first half of this forum from Wednesday, September 26, 2018, which discussed two of the upcoming initiatives that will be on the November 2018 ballot, LR 129 and LR 128. We've also got coverage of the second half of the forum, which discusses I-185 and I-186. Please stay tuned to KGVM for information about the upcoming 2018 election.